What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. If you are new here, Polititeen is a podcast that hopes to spark political conversation in our youth by talking about current politics with people that are currently politically active. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and as always, happy listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. I'm Damien, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Polititeen podcast, where Damien and I strive to have political conversation with educated people, political leaders from across the community, talking about issues anywhere from gun violence, race issues, to climate change in today's very divisive political climate. Now, today with us, we have a very special guest. Her name is Blair Erskine, an up-and-coming politician, a rising leader in the realm of, I guess, a political leader, as I'd like to say. But we'd like you to tell the viewers a little bit about yourself.
Oh, that was very nice. I've never considered myself an up-and-coming political leader. I'm Blair. I am a comedian on Twitter because stand-up comedy doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So, that's me for right now. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and what was the statement? Oh, I forgot.
You know what, Damien? I forgot, but I have it now. It's force on the rise.
There you
that's
go.
That's what Damien told me to call you. He told me to call you a force on the rise.
Oh, God. You guys watched. Oh, no. Did you watch that web series?
We loved Damien it. Did. I loved it.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Gosh, you regret things you put on the internet. Remember that as you guys get older. I'm proud of that, and that like I finished something, like I completed a project. But I look back, I mean, I can't watch it, but I'm glad that you did your research. That's impressive. Wow.
Yeah, no, of course.
And, you know, it's not all of us, you know, we have a research director on the team. So, a special thank you to Julia Hartman, our research intern, for the work that she puts in every single day. A big shout out to her, but without further ado, let's begin the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I want to thank you because I was watching that that web series while I was doing Driver's Ed Online. So you really saved me. You saved me a lot of effort that I had to put in. But how did you get into comedy? I've always been super interested in stand up. I've there's been points my girlfriend makes fun of me a lot because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be a stand up comedian. She's like, oh, you're gonna be poor. And I'm like, I guess, but she makes fun of me, and I've always just been really interested in it. And I love to do stand up at some point. But how did you get into it?
Yeah, you should. I got into it kind of a backwards way. I mean, I was a theater kid in high school, and I studied it in college for a while, and then I started doing improv in my early 20s. And by doing improv, I was just taking improv classes. I was horrible at improv. And so I saw someone teaching a stand-up comedy class, and I was like, I'll take that. Why not? Immediately regretted it. But I just started going to open mics after that. And I don't know, I ended up being kind of okay at it, and I stuck with it. And then the apocalypse happened. And so I think I've been doing it for about 3 years, I think. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's scary, but it's fun. Everybody should try it. It's fun just to like have command of a room, you know, captive audience.
Yeah.
It's you feel powerful. You should do it.
Absolutely. And Damien told me about you through the Twitter quest that he had a couple of weeks ago, actually. He was like, yo, Varun, check out Blair Erskine on Twitter. And I looked at your page and I was like, you know, that's crazy, man. I mean, this is one of the most funny people I've seen on the, I guess, on the political side of Twitter. And so it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on right now as I'm speaking. But on the topic of your Twitter page and the videos you post on there, you've got a lot of recognition on famous news channels for your videos. But I particularly saw the one you posted a couple of days ago on Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, one of the hot spots, as you said, for the novel coronavirus, posing as his nanny. It was a very funny video to me. Governor DeSantis made headlines, first of all, because the way he handled the coronavirus in Florida. And second of all, because dude said that Florida was God's waiting room as a reference.
He honestly said that. Yes.
Absolutely. And well, I'm going to detour here, but I think that, you know, Ron, hey, if Florida's God's waiting room, you're doing the God's dirty work. You're the devil, per se, for Florida because of how many deaths have from the virus. You know, I'm just curious to know, you mentioned that Republicans can compare Donald Trump to gods. Well, I began with on a more serious note for a reason, because, you know, in today's society, it's really reached that extreme. You know, Blair, I see a lot of people in today's world, my friends, my peers, who think of him as basically a god who cannot be touched, cannot have anything fall upon him. That's, you know, it's either supporting him or fake news. So is there anything that, you know, people or he can do to lose somebody's support who is a Trump supporter in your eyes?
Oh, God. This has been interesting because I'm from a really small town in South Georgia. And, and I mean, not like a poor town, but I mean, yeah, like I would say a lot of it is, you know, they're under like the poverty line. And I was poor growing up. And it's just a small country town, right? And so, I mean, like when you think of a town like that and people like my family and people like us, you don't think about them supporting somebody like Trump, you know, who is a billionaire and has never had to want or work for anything really in his life. And then he started running for president. And it really shocked me to see how many people who grew up poor like me and grew up in a small town just sort of like fawned over him, this person that they have nothing in common with. And I've been waiting to see if he can do something to lose their support. And so far, you know, he hasn't. I mean, the most you'll get is like, oh, well, I think he should stay off Twitter. You know, maybe he doesn't say the right things all the time, but I like that about him. But it's crazy. I truly don't understand it. I'll never understand it.
Yeah, no, I don't think that there's something at this point like that he could do that would make him lose supporters. I think that he's already lost the most supporters that he's going to lose, honestly. Maybe he can mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we're talking about large numbers of people here, so it's an understatement to say that he can't lose supporters. Obviously he can still lose a certain amount of supporters, but I don't think
lost some for sure.
Yeah he's and he continues to lose some, but I think that for the most part we've seen the worst of it, and I think that everyone that's mm-hmm. here right now is going to probably be here to stay in November. So I think that it's very important that we go out and vote and definitely make our voices heard on November 3rd. But I mean, just obviously, you know, you have more experience than us in you've seen more things politically. Is there anything that you can kind of, I mean, obviously there was jokes to be had with the Obama administration and the Bush administration, but is there anything that you can really relate this to politically?
To this moment,
yeah,
like in time, yeah. God, no, I can't unless I relate it to like Mussolini or something. I wasn't alive for that, but I mean, that's what it is. No, fortunately, I can say that I have never seen something as terrifying as this current moment. It's crazy to see it happening now. It's crazy to feel like you're living through a history book, you know, like you're going to have kids one day and they're going to ask you about this year and you're not going to know where to fucking start. You know, like, what do you want to know? But no, I haven't. This is every day is just, I wake up and I'm like, what is going to happen today?
Yeah, it gets worse.
Oh, and I try not to cry. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to tell my kids down the road about what 2020 was, because I think this year is so unprecedented. Not only Trump, the coronavirus, we have a lot of things going on right now. We almost had World War III happen earlier this year, so that was hanging off. But 2020 has been a whirlwind, as you said. It's been a hard year for a lot of us, a laughable year. As you kind of make, you know, I think that I'm kind of going off on a hiatus here, but I think that you do inspire people. You've inspired me through your videos add a little bit of comedy to our podcast, because I think that, you know, watching your videos makes it clear that a lot of people don't receive information, political content, because it's too serious. You know, it's always this kind of serious politics is all of this, but you make politics understandable and you make it funny. And that's what I love about your videos. So it's obviously
great.
Absolutely. And I think Damien can relate to that as well.
Definitely. No, I was looking at your comments because, I mean, that's just what you do on Twitter, I suppose. I don't know. We're new to Twitter, really. We started doing it because of the podcast. But I was looking at your comments, and it's crazy to see how many people don't get it. Like, just don't get it at all.
Yeah, I know.
It's just ridiculous.
And it's even crazier to think, like, these people who don't get it, not like MAGA heads, they're not conservatives. They consider themselves liberals. They're on our team, right?
Yeah.
And it's it's disheartening to see them be so easily fooled, because I feel like, you know, I mean, I'm not a genius or anything. So I feel like just anybody can watch the video and listen to what I'm saying and realize that it's not real. You know, I don't see how anyone can watch it and think I'm being serious. So it's disheartening to see people who are on our team be so easily fooled, because I feel like that's a part of why we lost the last election, right? Like, you have to think critically about everything you read online, especially, you know, and it's been like, I didn't mean for it to be a social experiment. I didn't know anyone was gonna, you know, I've made videos before and like maybe 15 of my friends would like it and say, haha. And then I was like, wow, that's a lot. And then I made the one about the Costco guy and it blew up for some reason. And I saw everybody, you know, being like, well, screw you. And then it turned into, this weird social experiment that I never intended it to be, but it's been enlightening for sure.
Yeah, no. And I think the crazy thing is we invited you on the podcast, I don't think less than a week ago. It might've been 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you had 50,000 followers on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken. Since then, you've gained 20,000 followers. And it's just absolutely crazy because, you know, there was, I saw you after the video. We, you know, we film our podcast here in Atlanta. And I saw you after the video.
Oh, that you did.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
We're in North Atlanta, or we're in North Georgia. Sorry.
Oh, hi, neighbors. I thought you guys were like in a completely other state. Nice, cool.
No, yeah. And then I saw that you were from Georgia too, so I thought that was awesome. But no, we film our podcast here in Georgia, and obviously we have our governor who's it's just
we have our governor.
It's
we have him. We do. You're right.
You know, Governor Kemp is just him. Very unique, and I think that it was absolutely hilarious, the video that you made pretending to be his daughter. And I think that it's funny when you get to the part where you name your kids and people still don't get it. Like, I think you named one of your daughters hydroxychloroquine in that video, and people are still like, oh my god, this is fake, like, how do people believe this? It's like, no one else believes it but you.
I know, dude. And one of them, I named one of my kids AshleyMadison.com, and people were still like sending me, they don't send me death threats, but they send me like death wishes. You know, they're like, I hope you die. I'm not going to do it. I mean, and it doesn't bother me, because I'm like, you know, if I saw someone online being as ignorant as I'm like portraying myself to be, I would be pissed too. But like, Jesus Christ, come on. Kemp, that was fun. It's fun because he has daughters, and so I look like I could, I mean, I'm white, so I could pass for one. And it was, did you guys see the Facebook post that one of his daughters made a couple of months back about how he was like reopening the state, and she was like, leave my dad alone.
Oh.
Did you guys see that?
No, I didn't see that.
I'll have to send it to you, because that's what the video is based off of. I took some lines directly from that post. if you can imagine that. That was fun.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I saw your video posing as Representative Ted Yoho's daughter. And really, again, as I said, educating people through comedy is my perspective on it. It's obviously very, very funny. And sometimes people just don't know how to take a joke. On Twitter especially, you know, it's a platform that has been, you know, cited for toxicity. People have just been coming out and having these really toxic arguments. And when you're trying to have fun, you know, say something funny, it's very, very hard, especially on Twitter, the kind of platform that it is. But, you know, obviously as a woman and a daughter yourself, how did you feel when Representative Yoho came out on the House floor and used the fact that he had been married for 45 years and had two daughters as an excuse for his language towards Representative AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where he called her an effing B-word for any of our guests who don't really know. I think it was absolutely ignorant, insensitive, and your video really made me look more into how, you know, that's an excuse that shouldn't be used. Because I don't care who you are. I don't care if you have a daughter. I don't care if you have a wife. You can be misogynistic, and you can be sexist, and that doesn't give you a pass for it.
Oh yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I'm not glad that happened to her at all. I love her. She is like a world changer. And I'm so grateful that she exists in this world, but I'm glad that people were able to see that play out, on a public stage, because that excuse is used by so many men. You know, as a woman, I mean, we've all heard that from a guy before, like, well, I have a daughter, or like, I love my mom, I've got sisters, this and that. And she was absolutely so spot on that none of that excuses you from being a misogynistic asshole, you know, like, it's not the same at all as saying like, well, I have a Black friend, but it is, it is taking like a marginalized group of people. Not that, you know, white women are really a marginalized, you guys know what I'm saying. And just, it's taking like, a group of people who, you know, you've had more privilege than, you know, like your whole life, and using them as like a scapegoat. It's disgusting. And I'm glad that she, you know, read him for filth. She did a great job.
Yeah, I think that it's really crazy. You know, obviously the comedy scene has changed a lot throughout the years. I think it used to be a very male dominated scene. I think it still is very much male dominated, unfortunately.
For sure,
But even in politics, I think that on, like, you know, you have Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, and you have AOC, and these aren't just members of the Democratic Party. These are seen as leaders, and it's really interesting how you have different comedians coming up too who are doing the same thing. But I think the difficult thing now, and you know, this is a good segue, I'm gonna pat myself on the back for it, but but it's the colleges, because well, now it sounds like a bad segue. Either way, it's the fact that you have these colleges that, you know, that I think a lot of comedians, they start off in college, if I'm not mistaken. From what I've heard, you know, they start off by telling stories at a or doing stand-up at a bar, at a local bar, or at a local comedy club or something like that. Obviously with coronavirus, it's hard. But beyond that, immigrants have destroyed the comedy scene recently. They have been absolutely killing it. You have Asian Americans who are making jokes that are relatable to absolutely everyone. You know, Hispanics, Europeans, everyone is coming to, especially, I mean, even, you know, not necessarily immigrants, but the African American community is killing comedy right now. But, you know, in reference to immigrants, I think that it's going to be, you know, how is Trump's policy going to affect how immigrants kind of get to show up on the comedy scene?
Oh God. Well, that's a great question. Hopefully that won't be an issue for much longer, but I don't think that, I like to think that it won't affect it. So, I mean, I would like to think that it would put even more of a fire under people who are immigrants and who want to be a stand-up comedian or just have something to say, like give them even more of a push to like get on a stage and say it, like take their time to say it. I would like to think that we're past the point now of being scared of Trump and his policies and his supporters and like the consequences of our actions, like what they might do. And I would like to think that we're more just angry and like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do this thing that I want. I'm going to be here, like it or not. You know, that's what I would hope would happen. So we'll have to see. I mean, gosh, it's crazy to, you're right in that you're seeing more, sort of marginalized groups having a bigger voice in the comedy scene, but they've always been there all along. It's just that the white majority hasn't let them, you know, rise to the top, like where they should be. It's cool. I mean, quarantine has really given people a chance to discover new voices and people who don't look like them, people who don't have the same experience, and I think that's been really, really cool.
And you see immigrants rise in a lot of places in our nation, not only comedy but in a lot of other fields, especially politics. We saw you know, we had a person named, I forgot what her name was, actually a representative, Sam Park, was on our podcast a couple of weeks ago from the Georgia State House. The first gay, you know, legislator and the first Asian American legislator in the Georgia legislature, which is crazy. We had Brenda Lopez Romero, now I remember her name, she's the first Latinx congresswoman. in the Georgia legislature. So it's absolutely insane the amount of people we're seeing in comedy, in politics, in business, who are both women and are immigrants, part of these minority communities. But I think it's very, very important to mention today's, you know, race riots, racial tensions, things going on in today's world and what it has brought for the comedy community. I know Damien wanted to mention this on our episode today. I'm going to go into a segue into it. And if you have anything else to add, Damien, feel free to add after I speak about introduce the topic. But what I wanted to say was that, you know, Damien told me about this earlier. Dave Chappelle has been called out for making jokes about the LGBTQIA community, making jokes about, you know, people of minority class, people of, you know, women, a lot of these kind of insensitive jokes in many people's eyes. And the argument has been, should Dave Chappelle be canceled for his jokes, or should we accept his jokes as a progressive generation? Because a lot of these people have been like, you know, progressivism change doesn't come by changing rhetoric, it comes by changing actions. But you know, there's obviously been people who have been trying to cancel Dave Chappelle. So what is your take on comedians who just who use language and jokes that are insensitive towards certain communities? Is that acceptable in today's world and a changing world that we have right now, or is it something that should be canceled or removed from comedy?
I don't think Dave Chappelle should be canceled. No, Dave Chappelle, I feel like, the thing about Dave Chappelle is that he is very reclusive. And so we don't know a lot about Dave Chappelle just as a person. We know Dave Chappelle as a comedian. That's really all we get, because he's a very like notoriously private person.
Yeah, sure.
And so I've obviously, like most comedians I know, have loved Dave Chappelle for a long time, really respect his work. It was disappointing to see his specials that came out, I think it was last year. Like Sticks and Stones. Yeah, it sucked to hear some of the jokes in that special. And I know that, you know, people were offended. And, you know, people have a right to be offended. The things that he said were offensive to people. I mean, you can't listen to it and not take offense to it if you're, you know, a woman or, you know, a part of the LGBTQ community. And so I understand why people were upset. But at the same time, I think that it's important to do we want Dave Chappelle to censor himself to the point of not being Dave Chappelle? Do we not want to know what he thinks about these things? Because I feel like you should know, if you're a big fan of Dave Chappelle, you know, you should know like kind of what Dave Chappelle stands for, right? And so you don't want him to censor himself to the point of not being Dave Chappelle and then have this view of him that isn't, you know, all entirely there. But at the same time, I watched it and he would make a joke about, you know, someone in the trans community. And then at the same, like in the same breath almost, he would talk about how great it was to live in America and be able to see people be who they want to be, you know. Like he had a joke about Caitlyn Jenner and he talked about how cool it was to be able to see her get to be her, you know. And so like I feel honestly the reason I don't want to cancel Dave Chappelle is that I feel like most of those jokes that he makes, while offensive, I think it's almost like a social experiment for him personally, you know, to see what buttons he can push and like what people respond to. And but I, you know, at the same time, it's disappointing to see it not really, like, whenever he tells those jokes, he's not met with, like, you know, like, aw, or any sort of, like, contention, you know, like, the people in the audience were clapping and cheering, and so it's almost like, damn, you forget who Dave Chappelle's audience is, and his audience largely is, like, white, kind of, sort of conservative people. And I think that's part of the reason he left. Now I'm just getting into the history of Dave Chappelle. I'm sorry.
By all means.
Part of the reason that he left the Chappelle Show, and you guys probably, you've probably seen it, but it was a big deal, you know, whenever because there was only three seasons of the show and he left. And I think a big part of that was he didn't feel comfortable just sort of performing for this white audience who maybe didn't have his best interest in mind, you know? And maybe just wanted to see a black person entertain them instead of see a black person's point of view and really try to understand it, which is what he was trying to do. But that's not what that's not how a lot of his audience decided to consume his material, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just think Dave Chappelle is such an interesting character study, isn't the right word, but I love to listen to him talk. And, you know, I like to think at least that he is a good person. I mean, I read stories all the time of people having really like kind and enlightening experiences with Dave Chappelle. Like this woman recently was at one of, she was at like a, was it a, who was it? Hannibal Buress show. And Dave Chappelle was a special guest there, like a surprise guest. Did you guys read about this?
I did not.
So this, he was talking, it wasn't recently. It was like a few days after Eric Garner was killed. No, not killed. A few days after the police officer who killed him, like wasn't indicted. And so Chappelle was talking about that. And I think the woman said something like, you know, life's hard, get over it. And he took the rest of this, his time there to like talk about the black people who had been killed by police and talk about police brutality and the history and this and educate like the entire audience. And then after the show, the woman wanted to talk to him face to face. And someone was like, you know, I don't think he wants to see you. But Dave Chappelle was like, no, bring her on. I want to talk to her. And she apologized. And he was like, listen, it's okay. Now you're part of the solution. You know, you're not part of the problem anymore. Now when your friend says something ignorant, you can correct them because you learned something tonight. And like gave her a hug. And it's just took a picture with her. I think he's a good person. And I know I don't want to cancel Dave Chappelle. I'm sorry. I just went off on that rant.
No worries.
He's not paying me to say this. I love Dave Chappelle.
If he is, we want 5%. No, I love Dave Chappelle as well. And obviously, I don't know. It's just, he is a very interesting person. I mean, he was offered a lot of money to continue to do the Dave Chappelle show. And it's interesting because you brought your perspective and you said that you thought it was because he was tired of kind of performing in front of the conservative, you know, white crowd that he was performing in front of. And then when he didn't do the Dave Chappelle show and he went missing, I if I'm not mistaken, he left to Africa. And he spent some time in Africa. So it's interesting how it almost seems like he's insensitive, but extremely sensitive at the same time. And he seems like I don't know. It's almost like he's both sides of the coin at the exact same time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he wants to like, I think he's very sensitive. He's very keyed in, you know, and I think he's always learning. And so so he says something insensitive, right? People get offended. He takes that in and learns from it. But I think part of his comedy and I wasn't happy with the special, like I said, and sometimes I felt like it was less funny and more him just trying to be provocative. But I mean, you have to experiment.
Yeah,
I think. And I mean, his latest special wasn't funny really at all. I mean, it had a couple of laughs, but it was very poignant. But again, in his latest special where he talked about the Black Lives Matter movement and police brutality, he didn't mention any of the Black women who have been killed by police. And that was another problem. So there's room for improvement everywhere. You know, like people can't expect comedians to reflect the best of society. I mean, they're people too, right? Yeah. And so they can't get it right all the time. But Dave Chappelle is a person who I think tries to say something with his comedy, and I appreciate that in a comedian, someone who has like a point and isn't just doing it for the sake of doing it and making money, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. And just one quick statement. Isn't it weird? You know, unfortunately, it's just sad to think about the fact that we're using the deaths of unarmed African Americans as like timestamps. You were like a couple of days after Eric Garner died.
Oh my god!
It's gotten to the point where it's like they are timestamps, and
they really are.
It's just unfortunate. Well, go ahead, Varun, though.
Well, the fact of the matter is that you're absolutely right. I think that Dave Chappelle, in my opinion, deserves the benefit of the doubt. Because you know, we've seen so many comedy shows from him, and he's a black man. Historically, black males, black females have been very, very receptive of other people, other minorities, and how they've been dealing with oppression, you know, because black people have endured oppression for the past, you know, centuries, past couple of decades, more specifically, it's been very, very pervasive. So I think that historically, black people have been very receptive to the oppression of Asian Americans, to the oppression of Latinx communities, to the oppression of the LGBTQIA community. And Dave Chappelle especially has come out and said things that have been, you know, in furtherance of more rights towards these minorities. minorities, these minority communities. So I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt, as everybody does. I think we're all human here. And that's a point I wanted to bring up once again. You know, cancel culture is a very toxic thing. I was talking about toxicity on Twitter. One of the most toxic things that I've seen is people canceling one another on Twitter for simple comments. You know, somebody says something and now he's canceled. He or she is canceled. And that's the real issue that we're facing. It's the fact people don't understand that you can make a mistake and learn from it and become a better person from it. Or you can make a mistake and get canceled and become an even worse person. Because, you know, in retrospect, that really, really promotes going back to your own ideals, because you feel alienated. You feel like nobody's supporting you. I think that instead of canceling people, we should say, hey, you know, Dave Chappelle, that's wrong. But I see that you want to improve, and I see that based upon your fast actions, we need to help you improve. And somebody needs to come out to him and say that Dave Chappelle, and maybe it's us, say that Dave Chappelle, here's ways that you can help yourself not make jokes about the LGBTQIA community again. Here's what you need to know about that community, the jokes that you made. And really educate him instead of canceling him. And that's what we all need as Americans, as humans. It's not to be told that you're canceled. It's to be told that you're wrong and that you need to, you know, be able to fix yourself and learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, I have no doubt that he has, I mean, he read people's think pieces about that special and, you know, he has people around him. And I have no doubt that, you know, in his next hour long special, whenever that may be, he'll address it. And we'll see what he says then, you know, but I just can't in my heart. That sounds dumb, but I think that Dave Chappelle is a good person and means well in the things that he does. Unlike Louis C.K., for example,
yeah.
Who I, you know, the stuff with Louis happened and he, you know, gave kind of a very half-assed apology. And then he went away for a little bit. And then when he came back, it was just absolute bullshit, like hateful, misogynistic, bad. Like he wasn't, it didn't seem like he had learned anything other than like, oh, now people don't like me. And that made him mad. And this is coming, I used to be the biggest Louis fan. And so—
As was I.
And yeah, I mean, and I think the majority of us were willing to forgive him for what happened, you know, as it sucks that we even have to consider forgiving someone for something like that. It's awful what he did, but he did have the chance to like take the time and come back and be better and teach people something, you know, learn, teach himself something. And he just kind of went the opposite direction with that. Unlike Aziz Ansari, who, I mean, when that happened with Aziz, like I didn't understand what the big deal was. I mean, as a woman and many women, I know we read like the account of what happened and we were like, that just happens all the time. That's like a bad date, you know, that you're in. And yeah. It seemed like he respected, you know, it was consensual and he respected her when she said to stop, but you know, lines get blurred when you're in these situations. And it was nothing that I felt he needed to be canceled for. I wrote a whole thing about it and put it on Medium. And that's how I got the job I have currently, weirdly enough. But, you know, he took like 2 years, right? And then came back and he like took the time to reflect and listen to people and be better, even though what he did wasn't like a bad thing. Like I don't think he did anything wrong, really. And so it's just interesting to see how people react to being quote unquote canceled, which you can't cancel a person. Like it just doesn't, you know,
it's not ethical. It's not morally right. I don't think it works.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Definitely.
No.
And with that being said, I think that we're going to cut to a quick message from our sponsors here, and we'll be back continuing this amazing conversation. And we're back, and I think before the break we were talking about Aziz Ansari, if I said that right. And you know, I loved Master of None. I think I loved the first season. The second season kind of sucked, I'm not gonna lie, but I didn't like the second season as much. But either way, I wasn't aware of his situation. I had heard that he was being canceled, but I think this was at a time period where everyone was being canceled. So I wasn't aware of his situation. Can you kind of elaborate on that? Because I mean, I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I will be happy to tell you. Hopefully I can remember all of the facts. It's been a couple of years, but you're right. It was like in, I want to say November, or yeah, it was like maybe a month or two after Me Too kind of had that resurgence in October of 2017.
Yeah.
And what happened is, so babe.net, which is a website that is defunct now, came out with this, and they weren't like a legitimate, they weren't a place you went for news. Like nobody really, it was like a women's lifestyle sort of thing, but nothing too heavy or serious. And then all of a sudden they came out with this piece that exposed Aziz Ansari as being a type of like a sexual predator. But the story was that this woman had, you know, who was a fan of his, they met and they ended up going out on a date. And then they went back to his place afterwards and, you know, they made out and things were sort of moving toward, you know, sexual intimacy. And then she felt uncomfortable and asked him to stop. And he did stop. They stopped. They watched TV. Then they started making out again. And then she was like, stop. And so it was just sort of that back and forth. Yeah. But and eventually he called her, you know, a cab and she left. But she was saying that she felt like I think the thing was he didn't. I'll have to read it again, and you guys should read it. I'll send it to you. But while reading it, I remember thinking, and I remember writing in this piece that it seemed like, you know, a girl who meets this guy who, you know, she's a fan of, right, which is a big deal, and then he's not the person that you expect him to be. Like, he's not his Parks and Rec character, you know. He's not Tom Haverford. He's different than that, and he's horny, and he wants to have sex. He doesn't, you know, maybe it wasn't a love connection. It was just kind of a sex thing for him, and that's disappointing. And not to invalidate her experience at all, because I've been in situations with dudes before, every girl has, where it's like, you know, they want to have sex and you don't, but you don't want to be a prude, you know? And so you go along with it. And it's not that it's not consensual, like you're consenting to having sex, but you would rather be like getting to know him on an emotional level, if that makes sense. Like you'd rather be having a chat instead, and you feel kind of used, right? But it wasn't was a Louis situation or like a Harvey Weinstein situation. It was nothing like that. You know, she said stop and he stopped. And so, and she said that. And so, but this piece was, I mean, you know, I felt like the writer of it kind of exploited not only this woman, because she didn't take the proper precautions to like fully protect her identity, and people were able to easily find out who it was. And that's not safe or good for her, you know? But the writer kind of, it just seemed like a piece that you write to get attention on the writer's part, not the woman. Again, that's her experience, and I believe everything she said. It was just bullshit. I felt on babe.net's part. Yeah. That was, I remember writing the most about that. And he apologized, you know, like she had text of their conversation where he was like, I misread that situation. I'm so sorry, because she told him that it made her upset. And he was very respectful. And I do think that it was important. It's important for guys to know that, like, you know, hey, when she says stop, just stop. Even if she like it starts up again, maybe just like take a breath, you know, and think with your brain and just cool it for a little bit. Maybe talk to her, check in again, you know, instead of just like, oh, well, she's kissing me again, so I guess it's back on. You know, it's always good to like communicate. I think that's the big thing to be learned from that. But you guys should read it. It was an interesting point of the Me Too movement, because it was like a lot of women I know, very feminist, liberal women, were like, well, this is bullshit. I don't understand this.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it sounds like sexual assault from what you're saying. It sounds like a bad date.
No, yeah, that exactly. And that's what it was. That's what it was. Which, and that sucks for her, you know, and it sucks that she felt used or manipulated. Yeah. But it wasn't, I don't think it belonged in the Me Too conversation.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's a very big conversation we're having about women and sexual assault being used by men, misogyny on a national scale. And that's not really contributing to that conversation. That's, you know, pulling back on real stories of sexual assault. I think that I'm not going to you know, put it down for any reason in case it was kind of, you know, meritable. But from what I've read, I've been researching it over the past couple of, I guess, the past couple of minutes here. It sounds to me like a bad date. It doesn't sound like it was something that you know, it wasn't really his fault in that he did misread the situation, but it wasn't like he sexually assaulted her. He wasn't threatening towards her. He didn't try to force her into anything. I think that it was just a misread situation. And in those circumstances, it is something that you have to learn from. I think Aziz Ansari more than learned from that situation. He took it like a man.
He did, yeah.
And that's what people need to do. We have to understand that you shouldn't be canceled for something like that. I think that it should be a private matter more than a public matter. If Aziz Ansari did mean his apology, I think that he has learned and improved from it. Because I feel like Aziz Ansari is a very good person, you know, a person who knows his morals and knows exactly where he's going in life. And I think that a hindrance like that, you know, it's not sexual assault, and it could really ruin a person's career when they didn't really, you know, they didn't really try to do something in that kind of way. It's saddening that things like these are being classified as sexual assault when very pressing things are happening in our nation.
Yeah, that's how I felt at the time too. And yeah, it's you know, he apologized privately before this piece came out, and it sucks that it happened to her. It sucks. The situation sucks so bad. I think everything she said was true, but I do think that, yeah, it took away, especially at that time, away from the larger conversation, which was, you know, people are being held down by people in positions of power, you know, at their jobs, and they're being stifled and silenced. And none of that was true in this story. And so that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah.
I want to say one thing, Damon, before we continue. Ahead. It sucks, but it wasn't sexual assault. And that's what I'm going to stick with for the end of this conversation.
Yeah, no, and it's funny. Yeah. It's funny that you say that. I'm like over here biting my nails, and I think that most men are, because, well, like, you know, I hate being the guy that's like, oh, we're scared to get Me Too'd. But like, it is a fear as well, like, because, you know, even a crappy date like that can go wrong. Obviously, there's like dudes like Bill Cosby and like, you know, who just need to go to jail for the rest of their lives, to be quite honest. But like, then again, there also are cases where it's a less, I wouldn't say less serious, well, definitely less serious in this case, but, you know, a situation that can be just seen as a bad date, or it can be a really 50-50, but it's put onto Twitter's court, and it's put into the court of public opinions. And like, now this guy just has his life ruined. So, you know, obviously, for people like this, for me, it wouldn't be, I don't think that it's, I mean, it's still a fear to have. I've been dating my girlfriend for, I think, a year, and it's about to be eight months, yes, in August. And, you know, at the beginning, the whole Me Too thing was going on, and I was kind of like scared. But you talk about communication, and I communicated with her, and I told her, I was like, hey, you know, like, there's this whole situation going on. I knew that I wanted to try to do something, whether it was in the legal pathway or obviously, as I talked about already, which she's very obviously supportive of, me being a comedian. But you know, I told her that and that I really intended to do something with my life, and that it was a fear that I had at the end of the day. And I think that if you communicate that, people understand you better. So I don't know. It's just a weird situation for all guys, I think, and for girls especially.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, I understand your point. I mean, I've heard guys say that, like, it's scary. You don't know what someone's going to say about you, but, it's scarier, and you know this, you know, it's scarier for a woman who's like walking alone at night, or who like is in like a meeting with her boss, or like a work trip with her boss that she feels uncomfortable on, and she doesn't, you know, what's going to happen. So that's scary for women. And I feel like guys, it's good for them. I'm going to sound like a bitch, but it's good for men to have a taste of like fear, like consequences of like your actions, you know, because you guys, I know, like, wouldn't take advantage of a trust that a woman has in you, but I think it's good for men to think twice. Like, guys, I remember whenever it was like at the height of its popularity, I guess, Me Too, guys were like, what, so now I can't tell a woman that I think she's pretty? And it's like, yeah, maybe don't. I mean, like, we know, we don't need you to tell us. Like, there's a time and place to tell women like they look nice, you know, and it's usually not when you're a stranger at a gas station or like at work or something, you know. We don't want to hear that from you. We don't want to know that you're looking at us as like objects of, you know, like sexual desire, right?
Yeah.
But then again, sometimes we do want that. And so, but it's really, you know, it's just, when in doubt, just don't fucking say anything, right? Like, don't, right? It's, and you're doing the right thing. Communicate with your girlfriend and communicate with all women. Just talk to each other. It's so simple.
Higher standard is always much better than a lower standard, in my opinion. I think that having that kind of higher standard does promote a sense of, I guess, trust, first of all, before just doing things in a relationship level. And it just promotes not making stupid decisions, like idiotic and even disgusting situations from even happening in circumstances like that. So I'm actually happy. I think that I'm okay with being held to a higher standard than a lot of people are.
Yeah, because of the fact that
I'm okay with having that higher standard so that we can go towards a society, a future where we don't have to have that kind of standard, where it's acceptable for any, not acceptable, but a better society to where we just understand that
it's just
right. It's a better future. I don't know how to phrase it right now, but go ahead, Damien.
I was just going to, say, you know, it's funny because a year and 8 months ago, I was on the other side of it where I was like, you know, kind of scared and kind of understanding the situation. But like over the past month, you know, we started the podcast and I think the really eye-opening situation. And when we talk to our guests, I think a lot of other, you know, not to diss any other podcast, but it's kind of just like, ooh, a guest. Let's just have them on. Let's get the popularity from it. Let's have the conversation. But like we actually come away, I think we talked about it on the newspaper that just came, or the news story that just came out on us. But it was about the fact that we're kind of a blank slate and we can really learn from this. And we're not doing it just so people can listen to our conversations. We're genuinely doing it to learn and to hear what, you know, individuals with more experience have. But I say that to say in the past month, you know, my girlfriend has been going on walks and stuff, and she had to stop because she had this fear of being kidnapped. And I think a year and a half ago, I would have been ignorant and I would have been like, what are you worried about? But like, I've walked with her and she's been catcalled with me there. And the guys have regretted it, I'll tell you that. but, you know, like she was talking to me the other day that she was walking and some creepy guy was like walking behind her. And like he had his phone out and it almost looked like he was taking pictures of her. And then like literally not less than 2 days later, she texts me and she's like, some guys just yelled out of their car that I'm hot. And it's like, it's just such an uncomfortable situation because, you know, I hold myself to a higher standard and I respect her so much. Like I respect my girlfriend 1,000% and her dad loves me for it. Her mom loves me for it. Her whole family loves me. But it's like, I've been with this girl for 1 year and 8 months and I don't say some of the things that these guys are saying driving by her. And it's just, it's such a gross situation. And now she has to, you know, walk with her dad. I don't know. It just sucks to think that you can't even go for a walk on your own.
It sucks so much. Yeah. I remember whenever I was a freshman in college, I was going for a walk and, it was like 7-8 PM and I had like, I think it was campus security kind of come up and say like, hey, you know, maybe don't walk after, you know, dark. And that was the first time I was like, oh, because someone wants to kill me. You know, like that's it is scary. It's terrifying. It sucks that guys, some men feel that women's bodies are just things that they can freely comment on, you know, and make us feel afraid. And the picture taking thing, my God, I guess it was last year, this time last year, I just got done with a stand-up show at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta. And I came out onto the sidewalk, I was walking in my car, and I saw this creep taking photos of this girl who was walking by, who was wearing like a short little dress, like she was out on the town, you know, with girlfriends and stuff. And he was just like slyly taking pictures of her. And I don't know what came over me, but what the fuck are you doing? And like called him there on the street. I was like, do you know this woman? And he was like, oh yeah, I think I do. And I was like, what's her name? And you know, of course he couldn't tell me. And he was like, I was just taking pictures to send to my friends. And I made him delete them in front of me. I don't know. I was just like the adrenaline. Cause you know, you see stuff like this happen to your friends and yourself. And it sucks. I'm glad your girlfriend's walking with her dad. It sucks that she has to do that. It sucks that people are being, you know, kidnapped by police in Portland.
Yeah, and they're just letting it happen. They're just like, eh, just take me, I guess.
Letting it happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We talk a lot about, you know, black men. We don't talk about black women. We talk about not as much Latino men. We don't talk about Latinas. You know, it's a very hard thing to say that, you know, we just, you know, assign genders to political issues, to social issues, to public policy, when we don't understand that the other gender has just as many issues, if not more. And the Me Too movement is a perfect example of that. I was reading the book today. I forgot what, you know, what it was. It was actually called, I'm
is
forgetting
it the
right
new
now.
Jim Crow? Is that the one that
you It was New Jim Crow.
There you go.
It was. And they were talking about how, yes, black men do have a lot more instances of arrests and things like that. But the fact of the matter is that when they get arrested, who's taking, you know, the kind of brute force of it? It's the woman, the families. They're having to take care of the families, tell their kids that their husbands are in jail, their fathers are in jail. They can't see their papa. Yeah. So I think that it goes to show that, you know, but beyond people being arrested, it's also their families, the women in their lives are getting, you know, on an equal level as affected as them. People just don't realize that. And that's the big issue beyond the Me Too movement.
Yeah, black women have had the worst of it, of anyone in this country. You know, I mean, minority women, I would say, of course, Native American women, I mean, you know, but black women, especially, I feel like, because, you know, we see the majority of the black people who are being killed on our televisions are black men. And that's awful. And we need to talk about it. And then we also do need to talk about black women and how they've been marginalized and silenced, and how they have, you know, done so much, like saved our asses, like in the Roy Moore election a couple of years ago. Like black women are so important, and it feels crazy to say this, people should just know this, but they don't get the recognition that they deserve ever. They never have. And you're absolutely right. Like, it's, you know, when a white girl, I don't know, you know, what your girlfriend looks like, Damien, but whenever you're talking about her fear, you know, and I have that fear too, it's like black women have it like 20 times more, right? And it happens to them, but then they're not on the news like we would be, you know? And so, I mean, black women, there are so many missing black women that, you know, you don't never hear about, but the minute a blonde haired, blue eyed girl goes missing, it's like the whole country is searching for her. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's awful. And that's something that we're still, I mean, so far away from being on the right side of history about. We have to work every day.
Yeah, definitely. You know, my girlfriend, just for to throw it out there, she's a blonde hair, green eye. So a little bit different.
Okay.
A little bit different, but
diversity.
It's funny, yeah, right. It's interesting because at the same part, you know, Hispanic people make fun of me all the time, and they're like, "Oh, why aren't you dating like, you know, a Hispanic girl and like dating your own culture and stuff?" But it's weird it's not weird, I guess, but at the same time it is. You know, obviously being in Georgia, being in, you know, the South, it's a lot more conservative down here. A lot more conservative than other parts of the country. And being in a mixed race relationship, in a relationship where you're dealing with two different races, it's interesting because you just forget about it. Like, sometimes we're just like, oh yeah, we are we come from completely different cultures. Like, I speak a language that you can't speak, or at least, I mean, you try to, but but it's still interesting. And that's another fear too. And it's weird how, you know, minority communities, and I guess in a certain respect, she has gotten to deal with it, and she's gotten to understand it now a lot more that she's dating someone who is a minority. It's weird to refer to yourself as the minority. I don't know, Varun, if you've ever been, obviously, you know, I'm Hispanic and Varun is Indian, and I don't know, always referring to yourself as the minority is a weird situation, but that's beyond the point.
Well, I never refer to myself as a minority because I don't think of myself as it, because I have the wealth privilege that you have.
Well, I in that respect, definitely, but you know, race-wise, we're minorities.
I never call myself a minority.
Yeah, it's just weird. You don't see yourself as a minority. But either way, she's grown a lot, and she's really learned about situations. But even being a mixed race couple, again, an interracial couple, it's weird because you get fears that you didn't have before. Like, obviously, if I was dating another, you know, Latina, you'd still hear racist remarks. But it's like a different type of racism when like someone sees you walking with a white girl, and like you get looked at like, why is the white girl dating a Mexican? Like, what does he have to offer? Or depending on who's looking at me, Muslim, because they just don't know. It's yeah, just an odd thing, you know, an Arabic person, to be more correct there. But it's just odd. It's odd. She's learned so much, and I'm very proud of her. But there's so much to learn. And, you know, there's still stuff that I'm learning about cultures that I thought that I understood fully. And I think, again, talking about Dr. Neil Lester again, on the podcast, obviously, we started it after the death of George Floyd. And it was a tragedy in the nation. But Dr. Lester, being, you know, an African-American man, he comes on the podcast and he's like, this isn't all you guys should be talking about. He's like, there's like issues with, you know, the menstrual, not issues with the menstrual cycle, but there's not awareness towards women and you know, their menstrual cycles or women and the fact that they don't have free hygiene products. And it's like, you can bring awareness to all these different issues while still bringing awareness to this. And ever since then, we've been focusing on what's something that we can talk about that doesn't get as much attention. So it's great that this, you know, as disgusting as this time period is, it's also really interesting. At least us as people, we're growing, and I think that America honestly is maturing in this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're like in a boiling pot right now, and everything's kind of coming to the top, and we're seeing all these different things being exposed. And yeah, it's it is possible to you know, hold more than one thing at one time, right? Like there's it feels impossible sometimes because of everything happening in the world, but it is good to, yeah, I mean, realize that there's more than the mainstream issue at hand, you know, while also never letting that mainstream issue, which is, you know, Black Lives Matter, it should never be put to the back of the mind, you know, like it has been so often. And you're seeing that happen right now, you know, people, because there's always like, you know, especially this year, there's like another tragedy that happens, or there's something else that we have to worry about. And so like this big issue that we never need to stop fighting for and against is, it's like kind of put on the back burner. But yeah, he's right, there's always more that you can learn, you know. And it's good to talk to people that have different backgrounds than you, and it's also good to not be scared of messing up, right? Like not to try too hard to like be politically correct and get everything right, because it's just impossible to do. And you know, you guys were talking about earlier, kind of whenever we were talking about the Aziz thing, kind of being nervous to like define like what is and isn't sexual assault, or like what just your opinion was on the story, right? And it's okay to have an opinion, and it's okay to I never want you guys or anyone to be scared to like to be like, well, this is what I think about something, and then just have someone correct you, you know. I think it's important. I find myself being scared of saying the wrong thing because I don't want to get like canceled, or I don't want people to think I'm an ignorant, you know, dumbass or something. But there are things that we're all ignorant about, and the only way that we're going to kind of fix those biases that we have and learn is by making mistakes and learning from them. And so don't be afraid to talk about an issue and get it wrong and have someone correct you. I think that's important too.
Well, I've seen a lot of, I mean, personally, I've seen a lot of that happening on the left side, more than the right side. People just saying and not keeping an open mind towards other types of conversation. And that's weird to say now that we're talking about liberals and conservatives. I've seen a lot of liberals not have an open mind, be so close-minded and so focused upon being politically correct that they forget that we're all human. We all make mistakes, and we should all have an open mind towards fixing those mistakes or understanding our own flaws. But I think that, you know, liberals and a lot of liberals consider themselves this sort of social elite, policy public elite. So they know everything, and that they don't really have an open mind towards different issues. And that's the main problem with today's society that I see going around. It's that kind of mentality that I'm elite and you're not, and you should listen to me, and I'm authoritarian, and that's the main problem, and that's what's hindering our progress going forward. But I'm really glad, Blair, with 2020. I'm really happy with the virus, actually, with this whole situation that's happening, because I think people, what they're doing at home is that they're thinking, and they're having more time on their hands, and they're thinking about the issues that we're facing, that we've been facing as Americans, and saying that, you know, I have so much time on my hands, what should I do about it? What should I do to fix the issues that we're facing as Americans? And I think that that's why we're seeing so many people go out and risk their safety, risk their health to fight for what they believe in. And that's an admirable cause. What's more admirable is what you said about yourself going out and you know, stopping that man taking pictures and telling him to delete those pictures, because that's real social activism. And then that's really, you know, telling people that you mean what you say, and that you're willing to put, you know, put yourself on the line there, to you know, to promote what you're advocating for. So I mean, I'm really, really proud. It's an amazing.
I think you're right. I mean, I get chills still thinking about just how we were all, you know, quarantined, and you're sort of just like in this pressure cooker for a couple of months, and then George Floyd was killed, and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, and we, everybody, it just felt like we were all on the same, not all obviously, but it felt like most of us were on the same, we were pissed. We were just like, no more. Like, that's not gonna fucking happen. We see you, and we're not gonna let you do that. You can't keep doing it. And in the middle of a global health crisis, in the middle of this pandemic, people went out on the streets and said no, and they're still saying no.
Yeah.
And it's scary, you know? It's scary that we even have to. It's scary that we have to consider whether or not like it's worth risking our lives over, but it absolutely is, you know, because if we want this, if we want democracy to be around for our kids and our grandkids, we have to put some shit on the line now. And that's what our ancestors did for us. That's why we're here and we're able to enjoy the liberties that we do have now. Right. And so, I mean, revolutions are necessary. And I think what's happening now is a revolution, and it's been amazing to see people fight for just what is morally right. You know, like, politics aside, you don't get to kill people because you have authority. It's insane. It's just like, it's so hard to fathom this time that we're living in, but it's also incredible at the same time.
Yeah.
Speaking of killing people with authority, I wanted to talk to her something else, and Damien, you can go ahead and talk after I bring up a stalking point. But, you know, the president has been killing people with his authority with the whole virus going on. Governor Kemp has been killing people with his authority. Mm-hmm. Governor DeSantis has been killing people with his authority. I think that it's beyond police officers now. It is into political figures, you know, using their political standpoint to just kill people for economic gain. I heard that there was one governor a couple of months ago, who was like, basically saying that seniors should be able to sacrifice their lives for the economy, which is absolutely unheard of. You know, you can't let the American people die because you want to save your ass and save the economy and save your kids' economy. You know, it's money at the end of the day, and you're dealing with American lives. You can't deal in American lives.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and an economy doesn't exist without people around, and so to kill the people, I mean, it's crazy to see people choose money over human life. I mean, you would think, I mean, I have such terrible anxiety, and I thought that I had worried about every possible terrible scenario that could ever happen in this world, right? And then the pandemic happened, and I was like, oh, I never thought about that. But you would think that in a pandemic, it would just be such an easy choice, right? Like, okay, yes, we'll all wear masks. Because if we all stay inside for a few weeks, we can get rid of this, right? Like, there's such a simple solution. And then, bam, like, half the people are like, no. And you're like, what is happening? Like, I would have thought that Brian Kemp would have, you know, wanted Georgians to stay alive. And I look back and I'm like, what a stupid bitch you were. Of course he wants to kill, like, everybody. He's evil. It's insane.
Yeah, no, it's weird. Because, you know, people talk about, oh, well, it's not an easy situation, because if we all stay inside, we can't go to work, and we can't pay for, you know, all our, you know, we can't pay for necessities and such. But now we're having to come out with, I think, another like $3 trillion stimulus package to make sure that everyone who, you know, can't work is able to get money. Whereas if we would have just, what was the first one? $4 trillion. So you get $7 trillion. Yeah. You tell everyone to stay inside for 2 months, and you put all $7 trillion and you just combine them all into one big stimulus package. And obviously hindsight's 2020 or whatever, but like, it's just, you know, we talk about
it. They knew that then, and yeah.
Yeah, no. And you know, I was going to say, hindsight is 2020, but we talk about on the podcast how we're centrist. But the thing is, it's gotten to the point where it's not a political issue anymore. It's a moral issue. And it's you're not talking about, oh, maybe Trump is killing people because you know how they always blame politicians, or they have blamed politicians in the past, saying that people are dying because of like some, it's sad to say inadvertent, but like some loophole in one of their policies where it's like, well, Obamacare doesn't protect this person, so Obama has killed a million people. But like up front, this isn't like a way that you have to look at it from a different perspective to see how many people have died. We can say that, you know, as the Lincoln Project calls it, the Trump virus has killed 150,000 people, not indirectly, not from a, you know, a side window or behind the back or something that we can't really see unless you're looking at it from a different perspective or you're in that position of that person. I can say it as someone who hasn't lost a direct family member to coronavirus. I can say that 150,000 people have died and 150,000 people have lost loved ones because of, it's just bigotry, I think. It's just people not willing to admit that they're wrong.
It's fragility. He's such a fragile man, and so many of these people in power are. And it's weird to think like in 30 years or 50, you know, whenever, future generations are going to look back at this point in history and they're going to be like, why didn't they just do this thing? Like this, there's such a simple solution right there. You know, they're going to look back and they're going to be like, they're going to be able to see from an outside perspective how easy it would have been to prevent this, you know? And then they're going to be so confused. Yeah. Like after we're all dead, you know, and there's none of us to talk to anymore, they're going to be like, that they were here. I just asked them, why didn't you know,
do let's this? Read the book thing. About 2020.
Yeah, there are going to be so many. I can't wait to see the documentary about 2020. It's going to be a doozy. I saw a tweet the other day that was like, if you took 2020 into a movie studio, like if you wrote it as a script and you took it to a studio, they would be like, you have to pick a thing. It can't be all of the things.
Yeah, it's like 2012 on steroids.
Too much. I know.
And 2012 was a hypothetical. But, you know, we're coming here. I think we already went over the hour mark. It's crazy to think about. This is just an incredible conversation. But, you know, as we're approaching here the end, we're going to ask you the same question that we ask every single one of our guests. And that is, if you had one saying, one thing, one message, you know, one quote that you could leave to America's youth, what would it be?
Oh, my God.
And take your time. Please think about it. Yeah. You know, it can be your own quote. It can be a quote from somebody else.
Oh, my gosh. If I had one quote, I'm trying to think of my dad used to have, so many good quotes. Oh, God. Man.
Absolutely. Speak your mind. Just say something that comes to your mind.
Yeah.
If you can't.
There's so much happening right now. There's so much going on in my mind. Just fucking be cool. Just fucking be cool. That's what I want. That's my quote. Everybody needs to chill out, go outside for a little bit, think about things. Like, don't be an idiot. Like, don't have knee-jerk responses to things. Just fucking be cool. That's JFBC, and that's my platform.
There you go. Tweet it out. Hashtag JFBC.
JFBC. I didn't think about that.
but, you know, now that we're coming to the end, I want to, as always, thank Varun for joining me and having an amazing conversation, and Blair for coming on the podcast. We hope that we can have you on in the future again. It was really an insightful conversation, and I really did enjoy it. We had a lot of good laughs, and wish you a bunch of success. Obviously, you're growing at a rapid rate, and we hope to see that coming in the future. And you can say, you know, since you are already a force on the rise, but you can say in the future that you did the Politeen podcast. And
oh my God, I'm gonna be saying it so much. Thank you for having me on. You guys are so cool, and I will come back anytime.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And for any of our viewers, make sure to go to our website at politeenpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at Politeen Show, and consider donating to our Patreon to support our initiative here at Politeen. And for the next episode with our Politeen podcast, I'm gonna raise the question of Trump asked people, why do I have such low approval ratings? We'll discuss that in the next episode. But thank you guys so much for watching this episode. Peace out, Politeen family. Hello everyone, thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Polititeen podcast. As always, we appreciate and thank you for your support over these past couple of weeks as we've grown as a podcast and as a duo between myself and Damien. And please follow us on Twitter at Polititeen Show, and always, as always, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Polititeen Show, and to connect with us via email at polititeenpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to check out our newly hosted website at polititeenpodcast.com. And lastly, please consider becoming a sponsor, a donor for our campaign on Patreon. You can get a link to that through our website at www.polititeenpodcast.com. And through becoming a sponsor, you can get some amazing exclusive perks, such as a way to contact us for questions, suggestions, becoming part of an exclusive community where you can kind of talk about your political viewpoints and ask questions of our guests as they come on, you know, live streams of us talking, and even posters, stickers to rep Polititeen. So as always, have a great rest of your day, and thank you so much for your support over these past couple of weeks. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much.